Welcome to the podcast of The Diane Rehm Show, smart conversation and civil dialogue from WAMU and NPR in Washington.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
For joining us, I'm Diane Rehm. The proposal to build a gigantic wind farm in Nantucket Sound has been called a seaside civil war. Well-heeled and well-connected residents of the Cape, Martha's Vineyard, and Nantucket have been vehemently opposed to the project from the very start. In a new book, journalists Wendy Williams and Robert Whitcomb detail the five-year ongoing battle against the project, which they say reveals much about our democratic process. The book is titled Cape Wind: Money, Celebrity, Class, Politics, and the Battle for Our Energy Future on Nantucket Sound. Co-author Wendy Williams joins me in the studio. I am sure we'll have many callers this morning who have experienced wind energy, who have opinions about wind energy, and especially there on Nantucket Sound. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning to you, Wendy.
Good morning,
Diane.
Thanks
for joining us. Why did you see this as a topic, as a national issue, and a subject to this book?
I got interested in the subject of energy after September 11th. Before that, I was interested in wildlife biology. And in fact, on September 11th, I was sitting down at my desk and starting a new book about the effect that noise has on living beings, human or wildlife. And the first call I made in the morning to a woman in New Hampshire, I got the answer, "I can't talk now because America's being attacked." So, of course, I was quite surprised and turned on the television and spent the next week or so in deep thought and decided that although I still believe that wildlife conservation is important, I needed to learn the field of energy because if we don't solve the energy problems, there won't be any wildlife really to protect. It was not intentional that I followed the Cape Wind story. I started re-educating myself by reading as much as I could about energy. And when I say that, I mean energy in any different form I could find it in. I tried to figure out what E equals MC square meant. And I also tried to figure out the historical context of coal and oil and gas. At the same time, this incredibly imaginative, ambitious project was proposed for Nantucket Sound, which is where I live. I don't live on the water, but the meetings were held 10 minutes from my house. So I began following the project for an international magazine called Wind Power Monthly, which is the industry news magazine published in Denmark, but in English. And the more I followed the project covering it for that magazine, the more I began to feel uncomfortable with some of the things that I saw going on.
Such as?
It seemed to me as though from the beginning, some local people, but not all, some local people had made up their minds that they did not want the project. This was, we attended meetings in which people had decided to oppose the project long before the developer had actually filed a proposal. The decision was made in the minds of some before they understood what the technology was or before they knew very much about who the proponent was, or before they understood much about how the electric grid functions.
Wendy, I know that you have written for many major publications, including Science, Scientific American, Audubon, the Christian Science Monitor. When you say you began writing for the magazine of the industry,
right,
does that make you an advocate as opposed to a journalist?
Not for this particular magazine, no. That was one of the things that I talked about with my editor in Denmark at great length. And I explained that although I would like to write for her magazine, I would need to be able to write stories as I saw them. And in fact, I did write stories for her magazine that the industry did not care for. I was the one that uncovered the problems with bats in the West Virginia mountains, and I wrote several stories about the fact that in some locations, bats have very serious and important problems negotiating wind farms. No one knows why. Research needs to be done. I'm not sure enough research has been done. So I'm not necessarily a proponent for the wind energy industry. I find it a fascinating field to report on.
Let's go to the specific proposal that you're talking about in the book. What did Cape Wind propose?
Initially, in 2001, Cape Wind wanted to put 170 wind turbines in the middle of Nantucket Sound. Those turbines would produce an aggregate of electricity that would be collected in the center of the field in a transformer station and would be sent by cable over to Cape Cod, where the electricity would be used by people who wanted electricity.
And what happened? Why was that particular location chosen?
The developer says it was chosen because he feels that is the best location for the project. The water on Horseshoe Shoal, which is where these would be built, is quite shallow, is very shallow. And he would like to, at this point, offshore wind has only been developed in somewhat shallow waters. The technology to develop these projects in deeper waters does not yet exist. It might exist in the future, but it's not available now.
It's interesting. I was recently out in the state of Washington driving to Walla Walla, and the people I was with pointed out these wind turbines, but they were way, way up in the mountains, on the top of those mountains, and thereby almost invisible to the eye unless you looked really, really hard. These, I gather, would be quite visible. What do they look like? Describe them for us.
Well, I don't agree that they'll be quite visible.
Okay.
I think the important thing to understand about the water is that conditions change on the water, not just from day to day, but from hour to hour. You need to know how much humidity is in the air, what's the cloud situation, what's the angle of the sun. So you could be looking in Nantucket Sound and see them clearly, and then look again an hour later and you might not see them because the sun might not be reflecting off them.
How close to shore would
about
they be?
About 5 or 6 miles offshore. It depends on where you're standing. I think it's the closest point is a little bit more than 5 miles. So you will be able to see them from the shore, but you'll have to be looking for them. At one point in researching the book, I went to Denmark. And Denmark has beautiful bike paths that go along the ocean. So I got a bike and I pedaled along the ocean and looked at one of their great projects out there. And I looked for people to talk to. And I found a youngster fixing a motorcycle in front of a house that was built on the ocean. And I stopped and I said, "Do you live here?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "There's wind turbines out in the ocean." And he said, "Yes." And I said, "When you look out your window, does that bother me? Does that bother you?" he looked at me like I was a little bit crazy, and he said, well, if I don't want to see the wind turbines, I'll look somewhere else. There's a lot of ocean. So that's one point of view about it.
Well, explain the area's power needs, their power requirements, and why this seems to be the appropriate way to go.
Well, you know, I have a very interesting answer to that question, as a matter of fact. In yesterday's Sunday Times, there was an article about carbon trading, and there's a map on that page that shows the groupings of high emissions from power plants, from traditional fossil fuel power plants. And if you look at it, you'll see that eastern Massachusetts, and in particular southeastern Massachusetts, is not quite as dark, as black, as pollutant-filled as New York City, but it's not that far away. If we were to build, and remember, I'm not saying build this project, but if we were to build an adequate number of offshore wind projects, a great deal of that pollution would be lessened. People talk about wind energy as a solution to global warming, and I think that there's some validity to that. But I think the rewards of wind energy would be much more immediate, particularly for people who live in eastern Massachusetts. It's a surprise to people to hear this, but Cape Cod has some of the worst air pollution in Massachusetts. There are microclimates over the Cape because it's odd configuration out over the ocean. And so it seems as though sometimes that pollution is kind of held over the Cape.
Where is the Cape's power currently generated?
Currently, we get our power from the Canal Electric Plant, which is known as one of Massachusetts' Filthy Five. There are five power plants in eastern Massachusetts which are very, very polluting plants, which use very old technology. The canal plant was built in the late 1960s. It's an old plant. It does not have a lot of new technology on it, although newer parts of it have been built, and there is gas turbines that work there that are cleaner.
Wendy Williams, she and Robert Whitcomb have written a new book. It's titled Cape Wind, Money, Celebrity, Class, Politics, and the Battle for Our Energy Future on Nantucket Sound. Welcome back. We're talking about a project on Nantucket Sound, Cape Wind, it's called, and Wendy Williams and Robert Whitcomb have written a new book about the project. Wendy Williams is here in the studio with us. Joining us now is Edward Barrett, who's a fisherman on Nantucket Sound. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Diane.
Captain Barrett, I gather you have some serious reservations about the project. Tell us about your concerns.
Yes, we do. We have some very serious reservations. As I see this project, I really don't see it as a wind energy question. I think that obviously wind energy is something that we need to look forward to in the future to supply our energy needs. But what I see it as a siting issue. If if this is going to be built, what is the ocean policy and the ocean management policy, and how does that interact with such things as fisheries management?
Can you respond to that, Wendy?
Well, I think deciding the ocean management policy and the siting policy is really up to the Minerals Management Service at this time. About 2 years ago, Congress gave Minerals Management Service the authority and the responsibility of making the decisions as to where offshore wind projects would be placed.
And that's part of a federal government decision. Is that what you're saying?
That was the Energy Policy Act of 2005.
Right.
And MMS is in the middle of making that decision as we speak.
So are you saying that those decisions are yet to be made?
They're in the process of being made right now. But you have to understand exactly how MMS will make its decisions as to where these projects will be placed is really not in the hands of any individual people. It's doubtful that they are going to be picking the sites themselves, which is what some people would like. For better or for worse, we have a free market policy in electricity these days. We don't make decisions and tell developers or utilities where projects will be built anymore. We've decided that we want to open up that old-fashioned system. And this particular proponent who wants to build Cape Wind is a product of 30 years of moving toward that policy.
Hmm. Kenton Barrett, how do you fear that this Cape Wind project might interfere with what you do?
Well, we work, it's an area that's very important to fisheries. It's an area that has natural habitat, has natural structure. It's an area where a lot of species come to spawn, to forage, to seek protection. And I think any time you start proposing putting 130, 40-foot-story structures up in an area, in a small area like that with a tight grid as they're doing, then I think you have to look at the effects that it's going to have on the marine resources.
Wendy.
Offshore wind has been in the water in Denmark and now in other European countries for 10 years. There's no evidence to date that there's any damage, long-term damage, to wildlife or to the environment. I would be the first person to write that story if I had scientific evidence that it were true.
Now, Kenton Barrett, how do you react when you hear Wendy say that?
Well, I would have to say, for one thing, the biology of Denmark and the biology in Nantucket Sound can be two different things. Nantucket Sound is a very unique spot. It is, and quite frankly, our requirements under Magnuson-Stevens for sustainable fisheries are much stricter than the requirements in Denmark. So, you know, I think on one hand, the American public has said that through the Magnuson-Stevens Act that we're going to be held to a certain level of responsibility. But on the other hand, how do you justify then putting an industrial power plant within areas that are particularly sensitive?
Okay, let's get to the comparison between Nantucket Sound and Denmark. Wendy, how do you respond?
Well, I've listened to discussions for 5 years about the fact that Nantucket Sound is special, that it has an environmental sensitivity that doesn't exist anywhere else. But I have searched the literature, and there is no evidence to show that that's the case. I have asked for more than 5 years. Some people have said that there's a substantial amount of fishing in Nantucket Sound. On the other hand, many people have told me that there is not a substantial amount of fishing in Nantucket Sound. I'm a science journalist, and what I do when a scientist tells me something, I say, that's interesting. Can you hand me the documents, and I'll call you after I read them. For 5 years, I have been told there's a lot of fishing in Nantucket Sound. I walk there a lot. I don't see the boats. I've asked for the documents, and the documents have never been given to me.
Kenton Barrett, how much fishing would you say goes on in Nantucket Sound?
I'm in utter disbelief, actually, that someone could actually say that. There are very specific statistics from the Division of Marine Fisheries that would point to the amount of fishing that does exist. The two important fisheries for mobile gear are squid and fluke. And for squid season, we generally harvest a little under 2 million pounds of squid. For fluke season, last year's quota was a million one. Those are species that are caught by day boats, that are caught from harbors such as Woods Hole, Hyannis, Nantucket, Chatham. There are a substantial amount of fishing for sea bass. That's another, striped bass. These are all very important species for the state of Massachusetts, and they're managed through those species in particular are managed through the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council. Those statistics are readily available. If someone hasn't given to her, I don't understand that. But we have.
It's a good question as to.
Well, I've asked Ed for those documents for 5 years, and he hasn't given them
You've
to me.
You've asked Edward Barrett.
Yes,
for those.
Yes. Well, and I have yet to receive them. I think the important point here is that when you look at these issues, it's important to nail down the facts and look at the documents before a decision is made.
And you feel that you have not received documents that you've specifically asked for to write this book.
Oh, I have not received documents about a variety of things to back up the claims that people are making. I'm not saying Ed is right or wrong. I'm saying as a science writer, I work with documents. I need documents. I can't just print what people say.
All right. Ed Barrett, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning for this discussion. Obviously, this discussion is going to continue. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Diane.
All right. And with us now are many, many callers. We'll go to the phones, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Here is an email. I find this very interesting from Margaret, who says, how would the opponents of Cape Wind Project like to live with the mountaintop removal mining taking place in Kentucky and West Virginia? You can visit Google Earth to see the devastation that our wasteful use of fossil fuels is calling. And Margaret is writing us from Newport, Kentucky. I'm sure, Wendy, you have seen some of those.
Actually, I grew up in that area of the world. I grew up where mining was a very important industry. But I do have, unfortunately, an answer for Margaret. Saturday night, I was having dinner at a nice restaurant in Hyannis, and a conversation began with a man who opposes the project. And I asked him that very question, and I'm really sorry to say that his answer was, I don't hike, so I don't care. Mm. I'm sorry to have to say that, but it's true.
And joining us now is Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. He's senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for having me.
I know you have been actively campaigning against this project. Tell us why.
Well, I've been representing commercial fishermen for 24 years as an advocate, and I've also been protecting public trust resources. The commercial fishermen of Cape Cod have asked me to get involved, and they've been great allies to the environmental movement over the years. They stood shoulder to shoulder with us when we stopped the southern longliners from coming up north. They've helped us on many issues, anti-development issues, against reckless development. And they said, you know, we're all for Cape Wind, but let's not put it in the middle of our most productive fishing grounds. The Horseshoe Shoal, 63% of the catch for the fishermen of Menemsha, Chatham, Hyannis, and a couple of other communities come from there. They will. Many of these families believe they will be put out of business because of this project. And all we've said to Jim Gordon is, Let's move it farther offshore. You know, that's what they're doing in Europe. They have deep water projects now operating in Europe, and they have many, many more planned. And let's put this offshore where it's not going to harm the fishermen who are so much a part of the culture and the economy of our region. There's many places like Chatham, like Menemsha, and like Hyannis where the entire character of the communities are built around the commercial fishery. This is a fishery that's 350 years old. Let's not steal their most valuable resource and turn it over to an industrialist so that he can make money and put these people out of business.
That's Wendy, how do you respond to this?
Well, I'm sorry to have to tell Mr. Kennedy I disagree with him on this. Deep water technology does not exist yet. It's in the process of being beta tested, which means that there are a few turbines that they're working with to see if they can develop a deep water technology, but we will not have deep water technology available probably for at least 20 years. That's how long it takes to develop a technology.
Okay.
And moreover, I think it's important to explain that this project, if it were built, and remember, I'm not saying that people should want it built or not want it built. It's up to the individual to make his or her own decision. This project would have immediate rewards in that the amount of air pollution would be quickly reduced if it were to begin to turn, as would be the case if other offshore wind projects in the area were built.
Mr. Kennedy.
Okay. The other, I think, just equally important reason is this is, you know, every time that there's a national crisis or an international crisis, the first thing that, you know, the polluters and industrialists say is, well, we have to sacrifice our most beautiful areas, whether it's, you know, the Anwar or whether it's building nuclear power plants or whatever. And here's another example. This is a public trust water. It's one of the most heavily utilized public trust resources in North America. There's up to 4 million people a year who use this resource. And what I've been fighting for 24 years is private developers who want to come and develop and steal public trust resources and privatize them. And in this case, you know, there's no democratic, there's very, very little democratic protection or process. What Wendy says in her book, which is a very, very distorted account of what's happened in this project, is that we should trust the Corps of Engineers. Well, I've been fighting the Corps of Engineers for 24 years, and I don't trust them. And what the Corps of Engineers would love to do is to turn our public waterways over to LNG facilities, over to, you know, this kind of industrial facility, over to the oil industry. The oil industry, when we decided that we were going to have offshore drilling, we passed a bill that protects the public and gives the public input into the process.
At 26 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. But Robert Kennedy, just how public are those shorelines?
Excuse me?
Just how public are those shorelines?
Are you talking about the shorelines, or are you talking about, you know, as I said, there's 4 million people who use Nantucket Sound every year. They're, you know, among the most heavily utilized waterways by the public in North America. There's, you know, there's 400,000 low-level air flights over those. That's why all of the communities on Cape Cod oppose this project.
But I gather you do believe in the efficacy of wind energy. Is that
absolutely
correct?
Absolutely. I'm involved in building wind projects.
But you just believe that this project, this particular project, should not be placed on Nantucket Sound.
Well, you know, it could be placed on Nantucket Sound, but it should be farther out where it's not going to interfere with
as I understand it, Wendy has already said that the placing these turbines in deeper water has not yet been fully tested.
Well, she is wrong about that. They're placing these turbines in Denmark. There's already turbines, deep water turbines in very deep water, 120 feet of water operating.
Is that correct, Wendy?
She is just wrong.
Okay, hold on a minute, Wendy.
The turbines are being beta tested. There are several
Denmark?
There are several individual turbines that are being beta tested. They're very heavily subsidized by governments and by corporations to perfect that technology. If they're able to perfect the technology, I think it'd be wonderful. But you have to understand that asking people to put these projects further out to sea, for example, south of Nantucket, is not just a question of whether the technology is extant or not. It's also much more risky to the people that have to go out and maintain those technologies. If you want that technology to operate all the way through the winter, you have to send people out there on a routine basis to be sure that the machinery is operating correctly. That's a pretty dangerous place to be sending people in January or February. But I have something else I'd like to say, Diane, if I could. It's very important to me.
That means it's going to be more.
I have a genuine concern about the deteriorating quality of the public conversation, and that's one of the reasons that I wrote this book. I have a real concern when I sit and listen to these conversations and hear these vastly sweeping generalizations. For example, the Army Corps of Engineers wants to do this or it wants to do that. The Army Corps of Engineers is composed of a lot of people, and they all have very different ideas about what they would like to achieve, both as employees of the government and as individual people.
All right, we've got to take a short break here. Robert Kennedy, I don't know if you can stay with us. I do thank you for your comments and talking about this project, Cape Wind. When we come back, we're going to open the phones. Thanks for joining us.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. Additional support for NPR comes from the Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in children, their families, and their communities, on the web at wkkf.org. And from the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, actor Gary Shandling. He's got a new DVD box set out collecting the best of The Larry Sanders Show, but also offering an entirely different brand new series as a bonus. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And we're back talking about a project on Nantucket Sound, a new book titled Cape Wind. Wendy Williams and Robert Whitcomb are the authors. Let's open the phones, 800-433-8850. First to Hancock, Maryland. Good morning, John. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for Diane, for having such an important topic today, and I hope you can hear me okay.
I certainly can.
Well, I have about three quick points to make, and I'll listen to the comments off the air. I guess the first point is a little bit of a historical perspective, and as I listen to this, one thing I'm aware of is that the fisheries industry of New England probably has historically as poor of a track record environmentally as the electric power industry in the U.S. has. If you just look at the decimation of the cod industry off the Grand Banks, I mean, they completely wiped it out. But I do want to acknowledge that the gentleman that represented the fisheries industry is concerned and aware of the impact. And so, like the power industry, I'm really delighted to hear that they've sort of turned that corner to be a little more responsible going forward. Mr. Kennedy speaks in a way that sounds like it's a predetermined that the fishery is just going to be ruined. And I have to say that hyperbole really discredits his point. It's already been presented that there's no strong evidence that will happen. My final point is, with all the energy that's gone into this dialogue and time and expense, why aren't both the wind power industry and the fisheries industry planting, I don't know, half a dozen of the foundations, which is what the environmental impact of these towers are, in the water? Why aren't they planting those on the periphery of the fishery, testing them? Why aren't they exploring modifications, you know, like a sunken ship can become a coral reef and can become habitat? Maybe there's modifications to these foundations that could actually increase the habitat.
All right, John, thanks for your call. Wendy.
You bring up what I think is a very interesting point, the amount of money spent on both sides in this argument. It's really breathtaking from my point of view. The developer has spent $30 million at this point trying to get the project built. A good deal of that has been on science and technology, but not all of it. The opponents have spent by now $15 million trying to keep this project from being built. And the point that I have to make is that in the course of spending that $15 million, I have not seen one scientific study come from them. They have not hired scientists, they have not done the research, and they have not produced the documents. And in 5 years, there certainly has been time for substantive studies to have been produced, and I don't see the documents.
All right, let's go to Colleen in Vendor, North Carolina. Good morning to you.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment about the aesthetics. First of all, I have seen these on the coast of England, the western coast, Cornwall, and I remember the first time that I saw them, I thought it was a little strange and sort of alien-looking, but then you think about what they're accomplishing with all of we're facing right now with the future and the uncertainty of global warming. The oceans continue to warm, bird migratory patterns are changing, so many things are going on, and if we don't find alternatives, and this is, you know, one place we start, if more and more people think about it, you know, none of those things are going to matter anymore anyway, and that's all I really wanted to say, and thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. Wendy?
I think that's also a very good point. To me, wind technology is the beginning of what I think of as the second American energy revolution. This is just the very first step toward developing technologies that access energy much more directly than the use of fossil fuels, which frankly is very 6th century. Coal was used in the 6th century by people in England. Why would we continue to do that now when we can access things so much more directly?
And let's talk now with Jim Lennard of Blue Water Wind in this morning's Washington Post. There's a story that Blue Water Wind has a proposal for a wind farm off the coast of Delaware. Jim Lennard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for having me on.
Please briefly describe for us what the plan is and how far out it would be.
Blue Water is proposing 200 turbines, 11 and a half miles due east of Rehoboth Beach. There's a backup position of 6.9 miles off of Bethany Beach, and we're competing against a coal proposal and a gas proposal to provide electricity to the electricity-starved Delmarva Peninsula.
Now, tell me what the status is of the review process.
Well, tomorrow our Public Service Commission in Delaware will look at all the bids and look at the Public Service Commission staff report, which recommends a wind farm with a backup gas plant to provide power to Delmarva, and we're hoping that the Public Service Commissioners will accept the staff report and let us move forward so we can negotiate directly with the utility to whom we would be providing the power.
Well, now, 11 miles off the shoreline sounds pretty deep to me.
Well, we're lucky in that there is a shallow shoal as we go out from the coast. We'll only be in about 75 feet of water.
I see.
And we will be burying our cable 6 feet under the seabed floor. In fact, we'll be burying the cable underneath the beachfront so that nobody will even see the cable. But more importantly, Diane, relevant to your program this morning, our turbines are going to be about a half a mile apart. And as a result, we'll be able to have commercial and recreational fishing throughout the wind park. There will be no exclusionary zones other than for safety purposes. We'll ask recreational boats to stay within about 10 meters away from each of the turbine bases.
Now, is what you're proposing adaptable to Nantucket Sound?
Wind technology, wind park technology, and offshore technology is very similar, so it certainly would be. Water depth is an issue that we would want to be very sensitive to, because as you get deeper, it gets more expensive, and going further out gets more expensive because of the cables that you have to bring in from further out.
Now, when you go through this review process, has there been a great deal of public debate about this?
There has been more public debate than any issue that the Public Service Commission has received, according to their own reports. We are delighted that there is so much public support in favor of the offshore wind project. One of the hallmarks of Blue Water Wind is that before we announce a project, we meet with all the local officials, the mayors, the town managers, the community groups, the environmental groups. Delaware Audubon is supporting us, the Delaware chapter, the Sierra Club, citizens groups are supporting us. We really have a great relationship with them. We learn from them, we respond to them, and during the next few years, we'll work closely with them to address their concerns.
So who are your opponents and what are they arguing?
Our opponents are the coal plant and the gas plant, primarily the coal plant, because they really want to build their $2 billion project where they also have four other coal-burning power plants. And they don't want to see wind take over their favorite spot for energy production. And they're fighting very hard. They don't want to lose, and they're pulling out all the stops. They've been around in Delaware for a long time. We, on the other hand, are a new company to Delaware, so we've had to get up to speed and establish our credibility. And I'm really proud of the work our company has done.
Now, Wendy, how does this project compare with what's being proposed off Nantucket?
Well, first, let me say that Blue Water Wind is a great company, and Peter Mandelstam has been excellent in working with local folks wherever he goes. He does have an ability to get over humps just because he goes all the way toward communicating. As far as the similarities go, I don't know a huge amount about what they intend to develop there, so I really can't speak to specifics. I can say that Cape Wind also says that they intend to let people do commercial and recreational fishing in between their turbines as well. So it the question is not whether the company is saying you can't use any of this area. The question falls onto the shoulders of the fishermen as to whether they would be willing to continue to fish in that area if there were turbines there.
So, Jim Lennard, finally, will the decision be made tomorrow as to whether to go forward with wind or coal or natural gas?
The Public Service Commission is scheduled to vote tomorrow. There are some complications, more than your listeners want to hear about, because there are three other state agencies that can play a role in this decision, and we're not sure if they vote tomorrow or whether it's just the Public Service Commission. But everybody is telling me that we should expect a vote tomorrow. We'll wait and see what it is. We hope it's for wind.
Jim Lennard, he's with Blue Water Wind, an organization that is proposing a wind farm off the coast of Delaware. Thanks so much for joining us.
Diane, thanks for having me.
Of course. And now to Eastham, Cape Cod, Marie, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Good. I would like to say that I am very much in favor of wind technology, and that one of the things many of us in Massachusetts hope for is that Deval Patrick will help us change some of the laws that exist so that municipalities can easily have their own turbines to run the towns. Right now, the laws are in place that favor the big electric companies, which brings me to my issue with the wind farm, which I am against as it's being proposed, mainly because I think one of the things that Wendy isn't talking enough about is the economics. In Denmark, as what my understanding is, the wind farms are firstly much smaller. Second of all, they're owned by the government and by the people. And I feel that one of the problems that we've run into with the big oil companies is we are being held hostage by big companies. It really isn't a free market. And to start that again, I mean, I completely agree with her that we need to move forward with all sorts of new technologies. But to make ourselves as a public victims to large companies that don't necessarily have the people best interest at heart, but rather a profit.
Marie, thanks for calling. Wendy?
This is a really interesting issue, and I hear it a lot in this discussion. But first, let me correct the record. Denmark is either in the process of completing or has already completed a 140 turbine project. The London Array is going to have 1,000 turbines. So in comparison to what is being built currently over on the other side of the ocean, this is not a large project. As far as the economics go, there's a lot of arguing over the economics, and we really can't know the internal workings of a private company. What we can know is that he will not be able to sell his electricity if it's not competitive. So if his price for electricity on the free and open market is outrageous, people won't buy the electricity. It's really quite simple in that regard. As far as, what was her third question?
What was your third question, Marie?
Well, I'm not sure that I had...
Oh, I know what we were discussing. We were discussing the issue of public versus private power. That's a debate that's been going on in this country ever since the days of Teddy Roosevelt,
exactly.
And it will continue. I understand the concerns, but currently we're in a period where people are saying private power is the way we need to go.
At 6 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. How much longer do you think it's going to take before this issue is resolved?
That is such an interesting question to think about. We have a new governor in Massachusetts. He wants to develop emerging energy technology. He wants to clean up the air. I think he's committed to what he says, as opposed to our past governor who changed his mind. I believe they'll be getting their state permits within the course of a year. And once they get their state permits, I believe they are very soon going to get their federal permits. The question of permitting will probably be cleaned up in a year to 2 years. After that, Mr. Gordon needs to go out and put together his financial package. And after that, he needs to get the project built. So I really can't predict whether or not he'll be able to put that financial package together or how he'll do it.
Here's an email from Barry, who says, as a summer resident of Martha's Vineyard and an avid windsurfer, I and many of my fellow sailors would look forward to seeing windmills in Nantucket Sound. It's interesting to watch people on the Aquinnah Beach trying to see the Newport Bridge on a clear day. The bridge is another industrial structure of great interest. As to fishing, you can fly over the sound and watch the draggers clear-cutting swaths behind them. It's hard to believe they are really concerned about the ecology of the sound. Yes, the sound needs to be managed on all counts, and the anti-wind lobby really drives me crazy. So There are arguments out there on both sides. They really need to talk to each other in language that each can understand and hear.
Well, you know, Diane, that was when I decided to write the book, was in December of 2004. I went to the Army Corps public hearings thinking I was going to hear facts, science, ideas, solutions to this problem. And instead, what I saw was a very, very wealthy group basically take over a public process. It was sort of like the rustlers had come in the Wild West and stolen the cattle or something. I waited for compromise for years here, and it became very apparent to me that the people who oppose this project are not interested in compromise. One person told me when I asked him about compromise, not one wind turbine in Nantucket Sound. There's not much you can do with that.
The book is titled Cape Wind, Money, Celebrity, Class, Politics, and the Battle for Our Energy Future on Nantucket Sound. Thank you so much for being here, Wendy. And thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Ann Adams, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, and Tanya Weinberg. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Andersman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, cassette and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio. Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available voice-activated navigation. More at acura.com/RDX.